and to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta prayesha bandreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat guttama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Sounds like an Artanivritti. That's our whole program this weekend. So before we chant the first verse, we should read the chapter summary, beginning chapter 18 of the 8th canto. Lord, this chapter is entitled Lord Vamanadeva, the Dwarf Incarnation. This chapter describes how Lord Vamanadeva appeared and how he went to the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Bali, who received him well and fulfilled his desire by offering him benedictions. Lord Vamanadeva appeared in this world from the womb of Aditi, completely equipped with conch shell, disc, club, and lotus. His bodily hue was blackish, and he was dressed in yellow garments. Lord Vishnu appeared at an auspicious moment on Ashravana Dwadashi, when the Abhijit star had arisen. At that time, in all the three worlds, including the higher planetary system, outer space, and this earth, all the demigods, the cows, the Brahmins, and even the seasons were happy because of God's appearance. Therefore, this auspicious day is called Vijaya. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has a Satchidananda body, appeared as the son of Kashyapa and Aditi, both of his parents were very astonished. After his appearance, the Lord assumed the form of a dwarf, Vamana. All the great sages expressed their jubilation, and with Kashyapa Muni before them, they performed the birthday ceremony of Lord Vamana. At the time of Lord Vamanadeva's sacred thread ceremony, he was honored by the sun god, Brihaspati, the goddess presiding over the planet Earth, the deity of the heavenly planets, his mother, Lord Brahma, Kuvera, the seven rishis, and others. Lord Vamanadeva then visited the sacrificial arena on the northern side of the Narmada River at the field known as Bhrigukutcha, where the Brahmins of the Bhrigu dynasty were performing yajñas. Wearing a belt made of munja straw, an upper garment of deer skin, and a sacred thread, and carrying in his hands a danda, an umbrella, and a water pot, kamandalu, Lord Vamanadeva appeared in the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Bali. Because of his transcendentally effulgent presence, all the priests were diminished in their prowess, and thus they all stood from their seats and offered prayers to Lord Vamanadeva. Even Lord Shiva accepts on his head the Ganges water generated from the toe of Lord Vamanadeva. Therefore, after washing the Lord's feet, Bali Maharaj immediately accepted the water from the Lord's feet on his head and felt that he and his predecessors had certainly been glorified. Then Bali Maharaj inquired of Lord Vamanadeva's welfare and requested the Lord to ask him for money, jewels, or anything else he might desire. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 30th day of December 2016 in Chicago, Illinois, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada. Beginning Canto 8, Chapter 18, Lord Vamanadeva, the Dwarf Incarnation. Text number 1. Sri Shuka Uvacha Ittam Virincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabuvam Rita Bhura Dityam Chaturbhujak Sangakadabja Chakra Pashangavasa Nalina Yatekshana Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Bidincha Stutakarma Virya Pradu Mabhuvan Mrtabhura Dityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana Itang Virincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvan Mrtabhura Dityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana. Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvamata Bhura Dityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana. Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvam Mrtabhur Adityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana. Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvam Mrtabhur Adityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa. Ladies, Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvam Mrtabhur Adityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana. Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvam Mrtabhur Adityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana. Sri Shuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Pradu Mabhuvam Mrtabhur Adityam Chaturbhujak Sangha Kadabja Chakra Prasanga Vasa Nalinaya Tekshana. Sri Shuka Uvacha Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Itham, in this way, Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya, the personality of Godhead, whose activities and prowess are always praised by Lord Brahma. Pradurbhuva became manifested. Amritabhu, whose appearance is always deathless. Adityam, from the womb of Aditi. Chatubhujaha, having four arms. Shankagada Abjachakra, decorated with conch shell, club, lotus, and disc. Pishangavasaha, dressed in yellow garments. Nalina Ayata, Ikshanaha, having blooming eyes like the petals of a lotus. Can someone douse the remainder of this incense? It's a little difficult for me. A little bit left there. Thank you. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, after Lord Brahma had thus spoken, glorifying the Supreme Lord's activities and prowess, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never subject to death like an ordinary living being, appeared from the womb of Aditi. His four hands were decorated with a conch shell, club, lotus, and disc. He was dressed in yellow garments, and his eyes appeared like the petals of a blooming lotus. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Amritabhu is significant in this verse. The Lord sometimes appears like an ordinary child taking birth, but this does not mean that he is subject to birth, death, or old age. One must be very intelligent to understand the appearance and activities of the Supreme Lord in his incarnations. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4:9. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha. One should try to understand that the Lord's appearance and disappearance and his activities are all divyam, or transcendental. The Lord has nothing to do with material activities. One who understands the appearance, disappearance, and activities of the Lord is immediately liberated. After giving up his body, he never again has to accept a material body, but is transferred to the spiritual world. Chaktva deham puna janma naiti mam eti sorjana. Now, am I intended to read more verses suddenly, right? Three more, right? Okay. So text two. I guess I'll just chant it myself. Shama vadato jasaraja kundala trishola chatri vadanambu jakpuman Sri vatsa vaksha balayanga lola sat kedita kanchi gunacharu bhuparaha. The body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, blackish in complexion, was free from all inebrieties. His lotus face, decorated with earrings resembling sharks, appeared very beautiful, and on his bosom was the mark of Sri Vatsa. He wore bangles on his wrists, armlets on his arms, a helmet on his head, a belt on his waist, a sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet. Text 3. Madhuvrata vrata bhagushteya swaya vedaji takshi vanamalaya harihi pajapatir veshmatamak Swarochisha Vinashayan Kandana Vishtakaustubaha. An uncommonly beautiful garland of flowers decorated his bosom, and because the flowers were extremely fragrant, a large group of bees, making their natural humming sounds, invaded them for honey. When the Lord appeared, wearing the Kaustubha gem on his neck, his effulgence vanquished the darkness in the home of the Prajapati Kashyapa. Dishak prasedu salilasha yastada praja parishta ritavogo nanvitaha dhyaurantariksham chitaragni jifa gavodvija sanjavrishur nagascha. At that time there was happiness in all directions, in the reservoirs of water like the rivers and oceans, and in the core of everyone's heart. The various seasons displayed their respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary system, in outer space, and on the surface of the earth were jubilant. The demigods, the cows, the Brahmins, and the hills and mountains were all filled with joy. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So here we have an instance, which is frequent in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of the appearance of the Lord in one of his many incarnations, Vamanadev. And as always, he appears due to the ardent desires of his devotees. You may remember, you've been reading the pastime of the battle between the demigods and the demons. This time the demons were led by Bali Maharaj, who's of course not a demon. He's a devotee inside and a demon outside. This happens sometimes in the Bhagavatam. But he was the leader of the demons, and because they were serving their spiritual master so nicely, they got empowered to conquer over Indra and the heavenly planets. And so, even before the battle, if I remember rightly, Indra, they saw the vast army of Bali heading toward the heavenly planets, and Indra consulted with Brihaspati, and Brihaspati said, "It's not your time. You better leave. You better flee the scene." So all the demigods left, and the demons, headed by Bali, took over Indraloka. This was very distressing, not only to the demons, but demigods, but to Mother Aditi, who's the mother of the demigods. And so she asked her husband, Kashyap, "What can I do?" And so he said, "Well, you perform this Pie of Ruta ceremony." And it's very, very sacred, and it's outlined very carefully. Pie of Ruta means drinking milk, the vow of just drinking milk, and there's many other things to it also. Basically worshiping the Lord in various ways. She performed it exactly, precisely, following instructions. And her desire was to have the Lord appear and that he would help the demigods regain their planets. That was her desire as she was performing this. And so after the performance of this Pie of Ruta ceremony, was it 7 days, 8 days? I think it's 12 days. And so the Lord appeared in his Vishnu form and encouraged her and assured her everything was going to be okay. And then a little while later, he appeared, appeared in Kashyapa, and then it was the transference of that divine energy went into Aditi, and she gave birth to Vamana, which we're just reading now. And she offered prayers. She offered prayers when he appeared externally, and then, of course, she offered other prayers, as we'll see, when he actually appeared externally. So, why Vamanadev? First of all, this word dwarf, which is known, that's what a Vamana means if you look it up in the dictionary. But in American English, this word dwarf has some connotations of, distorted body. So, but we'll never be able to change it to the midget. The midget is not going to work. So it's dwarf incarnation. The idea is diminutive, but perfectly formed. In fact, his beauty was very special. It was extremely beautiful. He's Krishna, and one of Krishna's opulence is beauty. Now, all these other Leela avatars and other don't express or display all of the opulences of Krishna in full. Only he does that. But Vamanadeva had a good portion of this beauty opulence, and he was very stunningly beautiful, even though diminutive. So as you progress in this chapter 18, you'll see what happens and how this form is very important. He was a little brahmachari. And so when he approached, as you read this, Bali performing all these sacrifices, he was able to beg some charity. And it goes on from there. I'm sure you know the story. But what's interesting, this various, of course, these pastimes occur in various levels, and there's multiple lessons to learn from them. And one of the things that I was just thinking about as reviewing the whole pastime is that, Aditi is glorified tremendously by having the Lord appear from her, right? She's the mother of now Vamanadev. He's known as Upendra, the Upa Indra. He's a brother of Indra. So he's known as Upendra. And of course, Trivikram, He who takes big steps. He took these big steps, pierced the universe, right? This is one of his names. But in all of this pastime, as we read the whole thing, who comes out as the most exalted devotee is actually Bali. Right? Bali takes his place among the other Mahajans for his act of being determined to give this charity to this Brahmin, despite the instruction of his so-called spiritual master, Shukracharya, whose service had given them all this power to take over the heavenly planets. So that key decision, and he eventually ends up, seemingly, in a very degraded position. He's arrested, everything is taken away from him, he's cast down into the lower planets, Sutala, right? But he is most exalted, because he had everything and gave everything. And he became the exemplar for Atmanivedana, isn't it? So the other another point here is one of the things that that over the years I realize is so essential, and you sometimes forget, is to meditate on the details. This is one of many descriptions of the form of the Lord, Virincha Sutta Karma Virya Chaturbhuja Shankha Gadabja Chakra. All of these details of how he appears, what his color is, what the eyes, is a beautiful lotus eyes. These verses are meant to be chanted. The Prabhupada said these are mantras. You can chant them again and again. We do in each class, right? So the idea is that, you know, most of the time we chant them, but we don't know the meaning of the words yet, you know. So unless you really know this verse, you won't know what the meaning is as. But if you go back and review, and when you study the Bhagavatam on your own, and you really get into each shloka, as you study them and look at the synonyms of the word-by-word meanings, and then chant the verse again, the meaning should come out as you're chanting it. It's a meditation. After all, we are meant to, just like the Hare Krishna mantra, we're meant to chant it again and again and again and be absorbed in the sound. And by that absorption in the sound and understanding the meaning that this is Krishna himself, one of the 10 offenses I like to point out, we all know this, the second offense, to equate the names of the demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva with Krishna's name, right? But that particular offense has actually three aspects. One is, you know, that's equal to or independent of, that the names of the name are equal to or independent of. Those are actually two different things. And I'll try to point it out in the Sanskrit, the original Sanskrit. Equal to means I can chant any name. Yeah, any name. I can chant Shiva's name, I can chant Kali's name, you know. It's all the same, it's just a name. And each one can give me all the results that I'm looking for. This is a great offense. This is said, someone who thinks like this is a Pashandi. Brahma Rudradi Daivatai. Someone who sees Brahma, Shiva, and the other demigods on an equal level with Narayan, Yasunayam Daivim, Brahma Rudradi Daivatai, Samad Vikshetha Vikshetha, Sapashandi Bhavedruvam. He becomes a Pashandi, an atheist. You know, seeing everything as God means that you don't believe in God. Is it? So that's obviously the same offense if you're thinking I can chant any name. And this is, you know, probably call it the hodgepodge, Hindus, you know. This is not bhakti. The other understanding of this is that equal to or independent of means that I can chant the name of Vishnu for certain things. But if I want other things, I have to chant Ganapati's name. If I want my business to succeed, I should worship Ganapati. Everyone knows, if I just worship Vishnu, he may take away my wealth. He's known as Hari. So to balance it out, I'll worship Ganapati, Ganesh. You see? This is a big offense also. But it's not uncommon, is it? Let me cover all the bases. Have you been to some of the... I've been to a temple like that. You have, you know, Lakshmi Narayan in the middle. Maybe not even in the middle. And then you have Ganesha over here, and you have Shiva there, there's Kali, there's a little, just to cover all the bases. That's not bhakti. That's a big offense. Now, the word in the Sanskrit defining this offense, I forget all the Sanskrit, but it describes it, Shivam, the auspicious name, can mean the Shiva can be auspicious or it can be the name of Shiva, and then the word comes diabinnam. This is the essence of this offense. Diabinnam means thinking separate. You see, but this is one of these Sanskrit words that you don't know. It could be diabinnam or diabinnam because you have the sandhi. Sandhi is where two words meet. And the sound of the first word, the end, changes to accommodate a smooth chanting. But also sometimes if you have one word ending in A and another word beginning in A, then they'll merge, they become diabinnam. But you're not sure if it's diabinnam in this case or diabinnam. You see the difference? So in the case of the meaning that I wanted to emphasize here, that to think the name of Krishna is different from Krishna. You see? Diya binnam. To think it's separate. Binnam means separate. It's like achintya, beta, beta tattva. The same idea. So beta means difference. Abeta means no difference. See? Binna means separate. Abinna means together. Binna prakata rashtada. We have in the seventh chapter these seven earth, water, fire, ether. These are my separated material energies. Binna. So to think that the name of Krishna is separate from Krishna is an offense. And let's put it this way: to not remember as you're chanting the holy name that this is Krishna himself, this is the offense. You see. So if we're chanting the offenses now, but that one isn't there because. It's corollary, but it's part of the offense. You read it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in a verse in the Adi Lila. I can give you the reference. I forget. But Prabhupada goes through the 10 offenses there, and he mentions this offense first, the one of thinking the name of Krishna is separate from Krishna. Now this is inconceivable. How can this name Krishna, is that's God? You see what I'm saying? From the material point of view, it doesn't make any sense. It's a chintya. But all the acharyas, the shastras, say, yes, yes. This is why Krishna, this chanting the name Krishna, even indifferently, by someone who doesn't know anything, is so powerful. Removes thousands of lifetimes worth of sin. It says many times. You know, this is that doesn't make any sense rationally, you know. But that's the power of the holy name. What to speak if you're chanting with devotion and understanding, and that Krishna is so kind, he's allowed me to associate with him directly through his holy name. You see? So this kind of understanding is meant to inform our chanting of the holy name in japa and also in kirtan. How fortunate we are. This is the Yuga Dharma. You know, the Kali Yuga. Here we read in Bhagavatam so many elaborate sacrifices. Who can begin to perform this Payavrata? You know, it's impossible. So detailed, so many things. But here we are, just come, chant, dance. This is the highest Dharma. Kalir dosha nide rajan, asti eko mahangana, kirtanave krishnasya, mukta sangam param bhajay. This Kali Yuga is an ocean of false. Does anyone want to argue that? I mean, it's almost overwhelming, the number of faults, right? I don't know. I'll tell you, this last election season, I was thinking, do we have 6 months to live? You know, if one of these two candidates gets in, we'll be in a war, world war, within 6 months. It seemed like likely, you know. The other one got in, so maybe it'll be a year. I mean, it's like there's so many ways in which individually or massively there can be utter disaster. The Kali Yuga. Kali means quarrel and dissension and fight and war. That's what Kali means. So therefore it says Kali Dosha Nide Rajan, that this king, Shukadeva speaking to Parikshit, this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. But there's one special quality. Asti Eko Mahadguna, very good quality. Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangam Param Vijay. just by chanting the name of Krishna. That's what it said, Kirtanadeva Krishna. Mukta Sangha. So Mukta Sangha, now this is a key phrase. What is keeping us in this material world? Our attachments. It's our attachment to it. In spite of it being an ocean of faults, in spite of it being so difficult and impossible, still we have the attachment. This is the nature of the conditioned soul. We form those attachments. So here it says Mukta Sangha. You become free from all these attachments. And Param Vajet, you go to the supreme abode of Krishna. Now, how does that happen? By this attachments being transferred to Krishna. And Krishna doesn't just mean Krishna on the altar or Krishna walking in Vrindavan. It means Krishna, Krishna's words, Krishna's books, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's temple, Krishna's service. Everything directly related to Krishna becomes nectar by the chanting of the holy name. And how does that work? Through purification. The attachment's already there, but it's being misplaced, it's being diverted into the material energy. So the process of Harinam Sankirtan especially is the most purifying. Chaito Dharpana Marjana. It purifies the heart, it cleanses the mirror of the heart. And that cleansing of the mirror of the heart produces the extinguishing of the fire of birth and death. And then the process continues with enlightenment. It's the life of all life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. It spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It's so nice you're chanting that Shikshastik every morning. You read the 20th chapter of Ranja Leela. It's described that one who reads this every day gradually, you know, for sure develops prema bhakti. Yeah. It's good to do that. So, and it gives one, expands the ocean of bliss. Where is that ocean of bliss now? You know, it's there in our heart. There's one nice letter that one devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada. And I didn't read, of course, you don't get to read the letters that are written to Prabhupada, but you can often understand a lot about the letter from Prabhupada's answer. So this letter was posted on a wall in some one of the temples in Europe that I visited many years ago. And Prabhupada was answering a question, and obviously the question was, where is the ocean of love of God? Prabhupada would speak about that, you know. And he said, I think you understand that the ocean is in your heart, you know. So every one of us has this reservoir of pleasure within our heart, right? That's there. Means that we're originally Krishna conscious, and that is our inherent quality. That is our swarup, our swadharma, our sanatana dharma, is to be lovers of Krishna and to experience at every moment the bliss of the loving exchange with Krishna. That's where the real happiness lies. So having forgotten that, tragically, we've turned away from Krishna, right? Krishna Bhuli Sejiva Nare Bahirmukha. Since time immemorial, we've been turned away. And therefore, Maya is giving us all kinds of miseries. We're still searching for that pleasure, but we're searching it in all the wrong places. So by fortunately coming in contact with this movement and with the knowledge that Srila Prabhupada has given to us in such abundance, one can get the inspiration to practice some bhajan, right? Some faith arises. So this preliminary faith has to arise by contact with devotees, by getting a book, by somehow or other. And enough faith to come into the association of devotees. Now, in modern day, that association, it can be through different media. Just like when we open these books, we should remember we're associating in the most important way with Srila Prabhupada and with everyone else who appears in these books. And one purport in the first canon, brother, we're so fortunate that Narada Muni has agreed to appear in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's something that we should appreciate. So all of these personalities are here and giving us the association. You worship the Bhagavad Gita, you're there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It's just a question of your consciousness, how much you appreciate it. There's no difference. It's all absolute. So that kind of sangha, what to speak of, you know, personal sangha, which is always very important as well, you know, person to person, gives you faith and also provides you with inspiration to practice bhajan. You know, this is the famous ladder of Rupa Goswami. And that bhajan, chiefly chanting the holy name, then Krishna so powerfully from within the heart, he's purifying. And then what happens? Well, you appreciate everything in relation to Krishna more, isn't it? And magically, without even any extraneous effort, you're starting to become detached from all of the bad habits and things that are keeping you bound to this world. Vairagya comes automatically. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. Who can complete the verse? Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayarahoitika. By simply engaging in the service to Vasudev, the Vairagya, detachment, and knowledge develop spontaneously. So that's what, you know, all of these stories, this is Bhagavatam, every word, the kirtan, everything, is helping us to become attached to Krishna, attracted to Krishna in all of his many forms, in many ways. So we shouldn't neglect these practices. Sometimes the thing is, in our material mind, when the mind is under the modes of nature, do you agree? Then it doesn't appeal. You know, something else appeals. Something non-Krishna will attract our mind. Chances are, hopefully, it's not going to be some gross, horrible thing, but it'll be something else beside Krishna, not directly related to Krishna consciousness. And this is where Maya can get in through the cracks, you know, and you can develop some kind of attachment that will become an obstacle to your progress in devotional service. So this is what this weekend is all about, you know, this anarta nivritti. Anarta nivritti is the third of those four steps from Shraddha to Prema. So, you know, Ado Shraddha Tatak Saru Sangha the Bhajana Kriya, the fourth. Tato Anarta Nivritti Satato Nishta Ruchitada. So the faith leads you to associate, the association inspires you to perform bhajan, and by that bhajan, which an important part of it is an essential step, is taking initiation. That's so important. Prabhupada was asked one time, why do we really need to take initiation? Can't we just practice without that, you know? And he says, no, you need to have a guru. Why? So that he can pull your ear. So you'll have someone who can get on your case without you getting all bent out of shape, right? If Bhakta Bob gets on your case, who are you? You know, I've been around for 6 months. But if you're, you know, Guru Dave, seeing you and says, you nonsense, what are you doing? He says, you take it. Other says, mercy. Yes, you know, this is what we need. And that's why Prabhupada's books, it's not so easy to read. If you're really serious in bhakti, you say, whoa, you know, Prabhupada's got me dead to rights here. You know, and this is what I need to read right now. You know, there's a challenge here. It's what when I was studying philosophy, there's this quality of normative, as a normative quality. It means the shoulds and should nots. Only human beings can have this concept of should. It means it's a moral aspect to it. You know, the animals, you know, just instinct. Where's food? You know, where's sex? Where's safety? Right? And after, you know, working very hard with those things, where's sleep? I can rest a little bit and get up and do the same thing tomorrow. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. There's no moral aspect to it. But human beings are meant to have that higher sense. What is my duty? Not just what do I want to do? This is the whole beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was covered by Krishna, you know, that he was put into that situation so that he would see, he developed this desire, right? His gut reaction was, I don't want to kill. I don't want to kill my exalted guru, and there's Bhishma Dev on the other side, and all my friends and relatives and in-laws. Says, what's the percentage? You're not supposed to sit like that in front of the deities in the nectar devotion. So he even had arguments. This is a perfect idea, how the head will serve the heart. You want to do something, and so you come up with an argument for it, right? So that you can somehow feel at peace doing it, even though you know deep in your heart it's the wrong thing to do. You know, so he had all these arguments from the Vedas, you know. But the whole Bhagavad Gita is getting him to transcend the gut reaction, the immediate emotions, based on your conditioned self, and to accept a higher authority, which means duty, over your feelings at the moment. And that's an essential part of sadhana bhakti, because we're all conditioned. We've been in the material world so long. So we need rules and regulations. We need the vidis, the do's and the don'ts. You know, and even if we don't want to do something, we have to do it. And even though we want to do something, we don't do it if we know it's not, you know, this is a surrender, right? This was our last year. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya vajranam. Anukulyasya sankalpa means to accept the favorable things and to reject the unfavorable. You know, even though we want to do just the opposite. So how do you get to that mood? By revering some higher authority. And that's why the guru is so important. So by that bhajana kriya, chiefly chanting and all the things that go with the chanting, the purification takes place. That's the anarta and the vritti. And so the quality of our bhajan and the quality of our discipline in devotional service will determine how fast we progress in that anarta and the vritti stage. That can take lifetimes. We can come back and do it again. Many of us probably have. That's why we're here. Didn't complete the course. But the anarta nivritti is meant to come to the stage of nishta, which means real firm faith, which is defined in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada course of verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Ashraddha shabdhe vishvaskohe sudridhanishtroy krishne bhakti korle sarva karma kritahoy. The Shraddha is defined here. This is the nishtha stage, not the preliminary Shraddha. Vishvaskoya, as firm determination. You cannot be deviated. That what? Krishna bhakti korle sarva karma kritahoy. That just by the practicing the principles of bhakti yoga in all of its variety, all of my aspirations will be fulfilled. Then that's all I need to do. Sarva karma kritahoy. That's all. I don't have to go outside and stop the bhakti and do something else. No. There's a bhakti way to work. There's a bhakti way to have a family. There's a bhakti way to eat. You can live, you know, nicely and still be a bhakta. There's a Krishna conscious way of doing everything from the moment you wake up to the moment you take your rest. So that nishta stage can come when the anartas are practically nil. That's why it says nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. The same verse that I chant, many devotees do at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita class, Bhagavatam class, in Prabhupada's immortal translation, which was resurrected. You know, it was revised in 1976, and it came back. Yes, by regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam. When devotees first read that, they said, "Oh, who has tried to insert this into the Bhagavatam so that will get us to come to the Bhagavatam class?" And Jayawarman says, please go and check the Delhi Bhagavatam. The original ones Prabhupada brought with him. And there it was. Prabhupada wrote regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam. So what is that verse all about? Is that by regularly serving the Bhagavat, the Mahabhagavat, the devotee Bhagavat, the guru, as well as the Bhagavatam, by ardent hearing and putting the instructions into practice in your life, that's the service of the Bhagavatam. Almost all of the abhudras, which are similar to anartas, they're practically synonym, are destroyed almost to nil. Nashta means destroyed. Prayeshu, almost, completely. Abhudreshu, nityam bhagavata sevaya, means regularly, every day. The Prabhupada insisted on these regular Bhagavatam classes every day. As soon as he had everything set up, 1970, I think it was 70 in L.A., first it was Isha Upanishad class, and then Bhagavatam class. Without fail. Bhagavad Yuttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. That's the Naishtiki, that's the Nishta platform. Your devotional service to Bhagavan becomes fixed. There's no doubt in your mind. Krishna is God, I'm his eternal servant, bhakti is the way to know him, and that's the path I'm on. You know, you're not yet perfect, but the ruchi increases at that point. Gradually everything becomes tasty. And it's not like these are mutually exclusive. You're not going to get any ruchi until you get to nishta. No, you're walking through the door and you get swept up into a kirtan, you're going to get some taste. Of course, you've got all, you know, then you leave and you get into the boats again, but you still had that taste. And that taste will keep you coming back. especially if the prasadam is very nice, that people remember that taste. So, but the idea is that everything becomes so tasty. Those you know, the Tulsi Puja that we've been attending, you know, 1,000 times, it becomes more and more meaningful to you, and more nectar. You know, it's such an exalted song Srila Prabhupada has given us every day. Let me become your maidservant. You know, it's like prayer for Manjari Bhava. Who can argue that? You know, right there. Anyone can join the temple. But how much do we appreciate it? And this is why I always stress, for the morning program, there is a certain finite number of prayers that we sing, Guru Vashtaka, the string of prayers, the Prema Dhwani, all of these things. And to really study those so you know the meaning of every word and every line in those prayers, it'll be such a more deeper experience for you. You know, Sangsara Dava Navalida Loka Tranaya. That's the first word. It's a compound word. It's a long word. In Sanskrit, you can string them together and get, you know, deeper meaning. So what is that saying? That this world is just like a forest fire. You know, birth and death. Dhavana lida loka, and all the people are suffering. But by the spiritual master, those who are taking shelter of a genuine spiritual master, they can be delivered from that. It's just like a cloud showering down this mercy in the form of the holy name, instructions, and everything else, to give us, deliver us from this forest fire. So the first emotion, if you really understand it, is great gratitude. If you're in the forest fire and somehow the helicopter comes and pulls you out of that, aren't you grateful to the guys who took the trouble to do it? We should be. So, but it won't happen unless you really understand the meaning of each word. So we have the books, it's there, and there's no lack of access to this. So try to do that. Really study, you know, everything in the Sringa prayers. See in the Sringadev, outside, inside, all over the place. Right? Ito on the Sringa, Padato on the Sringa. I'm telling you, that's what the advancement does. If you're really peaceful of mind, you can focus every detail. They say, you know, God is in the details. So bhakti is in the details. When you become what do they call it? Mindful, right? Of everything that you're doing. Like there's a nice verse in, many nice verses in the teachings of the nine yogendras in the 11th canto. So somehow the first one really attracted my mind. I memorized them all. There's like four or five famous verses in there. The source of fear, Bhayam Dvitiya Vanaveshitakset. Some of you may know that verse. The verse that Lord Chaitanya, when he was speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati, he said, my spiritual master, Ishvarpuri, said this following verse is the essence of the whole Bhagavatam. You know what it is? Evam Bhataksva Priyanama Kirta Jatan Uraga Dudachitta Uchai Hasatchitoro Tidirati Gaya Chunmaravan Vichati Loka Bhaya. It describes, because Prakashananda was criticizing, what are you? You're initiated into the wonderful Mayavad Sampradaya, and all, you're not studying Vedanta, you're just chanting and dancing? What is this sentimentality, right? Well, she said, no. My spiritual master said that this is the essence of the whole, you know, Bhagavatam. And so as one who has taken a vow to chant the holy name of Krishna, which is very dear to him, it generates raga. It generates love for God. And the heart melts. Dhruta chitta uchai. He chants very loudly, and then he dances and rolls on the ground and cries and all these different symptoms. This is the essence of Bhagavatam. So anyway, in that beginning of that teaching, and this is the beginning of his teachings to Maharaj Nimi, this is the first Yogendra speaking. The Maharaj Nimi, what is the goal of life and how to achieve it? He wanted to know what is the ultimate good. And so interestingly enough, he begins speaking about how one can overcome fear, because fear is a symptom of our separation from Krishna. So he begins, he says, Manye kutaschit bhayamachitasa paramadobasadamatra nityam, that my opinion, that one will be completely free of fear if he's always worshipping the lotus feet of Achyuta. You see? He starts out, he gives the answer right away. And what is the situation when one is not doing that? Udvigna buddher asadatma bhavat. Udvigna is the same word Prahlad used to describe everyone in this material world as attached to the impermanent. I mean, the intelligence is always disturbed. Asad Atma Bhavat. It's such a wonderful language. It's so concentrated and concise. Asad Atma Bhavat means thinking oneself to be a sat, namely this body. Those who are absorbed in the bodily concept of life, their intelligence is and mind is always disturbed. And in extreme cases, you can define this as fear. Anxiety comes into fear when there's some kind of danger. It's all from the bodily concept of life. But if one is always meditating and worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna, in bhakti, one is cured of that. So he goes on and he describes the Bhagavad Dharma as that which is spoken by Krishna himself. And then he summarizes in one verse, a famous verse, how one can, the mentality of one who is transcendent and is on the perfect platform of Krishna consciousness. Kayena vacha manasendriyava buddhyapanava unusasasvabhava kadoti yadyat sakalam parasmai narayanayeti samarpayetat. He's saying that this is the platform of fearlessness and bliss. With your body, with your words, with your mind, with your senses, with your intelligence, with your very self, and all of these, as you have gotten them due to your previous activities. We all have a different combination of those things. Whatever you do, karoti yad, whatever activity you perform, sakalam padasmai, all of them, one feels, I'm doing this as an offering to Narayan. You see? This is kind of an expansion of yat karoshi yadashnasi in Bhagavad Gita. Narayanadi samarpayeta, this is an offering. Now imagine living that way. Every step, every breath, everything you're speaking, every dollar you're spending or making, this is actually a service to Krishna. I'm doing this as a servant. Now it can't just be superficial. It's actually that way. You organize your life in such a way that everything you're doing, but you're aware of it. The point is every moment you're aware. Oh, this I'm just living. I'm breathing, just for Krishna's service. This is a platform, you know, of purity. But how to get there? You know, then he described it's not so easy. The very next verse is Bhayam Dvitiya Medavesha Taksyat. When we see things separate from Krishna, when we see this material world, which is a phantasmagoria, and it's Maya's thing, they always allure us. But when we see them separate from Krishna, that's called Dvitiya Abhinaveshita, absorbed in the second thing, thinking it's second to Krishna, Dvitiya, duality. It's the two meanings of duality. Ishada petasya viparhiyo asmriti. Asmriti, you forget all about your real nature. You identify with the body. And you've turned away from the Isha. Bahirmukha. Ishada petasya viparhiyo. And everything becomes upside down, reversed. Akura speaks very nicely of this in his prayers. He has this verse, he's describing himself, you know, as many of the acharyas do. And he's saying, anityanatma dukkeshu. Viparhiya matiryaham dvandvaramas tamo vishto yata natvaham tejya priyam. I forget the last line exactly. He says, in this reversal, viparhiya matam, I'm thinking that which is temporary and nityam is eternal. Namely, my material situation here in this material world. This is the most amazing thing. Anityanatma, well, that which I am not, this body, I'm thinking is actually me. And that which is sources of misery, I'm thinking of sources of happiness, right? And in this illusion, I'm trying to enjoy the dualities of this world, dvandvaramos, and entering deeper and deeper into darkness. And the worst thing about it all, I've completely forgotten that you are my most beloved master and Lord. He's praying to Krishna here. This is our situation. Anityanatma dukkeshu viparhiya matiryaham. So this reversal, we have to reverse it again so that we're actually in our constitutional position. And that's what the whole process of sadhana bhakti is. So I've kind of rambled on. It's a little late. Should we have one or two comments or questions? Yes, sir.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
My question is, you say everything we do, our service, our work, what have you, everything we do should be in service to Krishna, correct? To what extent can that become like a cop-out to just as an excuse to do what we want? Like, let's say a person that works at a steakhouse. I used to work at a steakhouse. And I don't think that would be recommended for someone, a Vaishnava, to do.
Absolutely, you're right. You're right about that.
So I can't say I'm doing that for Krishna, or like an exotic dancer, let's say, cannot say that they do that for Krishna.
Right.
Could they?
That's why I said, I don't know if you picked up on it, that it can't just be superficial. The idea is that in order to really say that truthfully and feel it and have it work, you have to find out what Krishna wants. If you're doing something for someone, if you're going to cook something for someone, and you want them to do, it's their birthday or something, you may find, well, what do you like to eat? You can't just imagine it, what I like to eat, and think, well, this must be what you like to eat, because it doesn't work that way. So Krishna is actually a person, and he has directly given us instructions in books like Bhagavad Gita, and also a good part of Bhagavatam, 11th canto, is full of Krishna's instructions, Uddhava Gita. And he sends his representatives and says, well, this is what to do for Krishna. This is, Prabhupada came and gave us that. And the wonderful thing is, when you chant Hare Krishna, you see that your desires are in flux. We tend to identify with who we are at the moment in the material consciousness. Well, this is who I am. I like this, I like that. What's the difference? But that's not who we really are. This is our non-self. This is our extraneous self. This is our material body and mind telling us this, conditioned self. The whole idea is to see, that's not who I am. I am the soul. And I have, because I'm part and parcel of Krishna, and I'm intrinsically a resident of the spiritual world, deep inside, my real desires are there, which I can't access now. And so how can I access that real nature and those real desires? That's the process of purification called bhakti yoga. But we don't know about it, so we need guidance. So before we can come to this platform, that's why it's a very advanced platform, we need to learn what Krishna wants. And the first instruction will probably be, if you walk into the Hare Krishna temple, chant Hare Krishna. Krishna definitely wants that. And if you do that, then you start to awaken more and more your understanding of Krishna wants. And you read the books, you hear the Shastra. And then when you say, yes, I'm doing this for Krishna, you can say, I know it's pleasing to him because of what I read here.
Okay, so it's not of like mental concoction.
It's not just a mental construct. It has to be genuine.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter is, you won't bother thinking like that if you're really in the modes and you're trying to enjoy the steak in the steakhouse. But if you come to the temple and you eat a wonderful pakora that's been offered to Krishna and you know it's prasadam, then you'll say, yes, I know Krishna wants me to take prasadam. Yeah, that I can do. Let me do that.
It gets really subtle. I was struggling at first when I first found Krishna consciousness, because I do stand-up comedy. And the thing with that is, I used to say a lot of obscene things.
Yeah.
Obscene and absurd. But I could try to justify and say this for Krishna because I'm making people laugh and people need it. But, I can't do that. When you know better, you got to do better.
Exactly.
We
are transformed by the process of devotion. It's getting a little late. If there's any other comment. I'm sorry, Guru. Yeah, here's one.
In this process of putting Krishna in the center like this, how does ashram help?
Ashram?
Ashram. Like, what is ashram?
Well, ashram is like a shelter. And the ashram is actually, we're supposed to be in an ashram no matter what we are. The grihastha ashram, the sannyasa ashram. So ashram means a place that is conducive for spiritual advancement. And it's like, the brahmachari ashram, this is from Prabhupada. He said this is very favorable because there's the culture, the peer pressure. Just like, the most difficult thing I remember when I joined the ashram, right, in 73 in Brooklyn. I really took shelter. It was like my material life had all collapsed around me, and I said, okay. And I've been studying books. The TLC was like a really important book that, it was full of philosophy, and I was into that. So I said, okay, I'm moving in, But then there were all these hurdles. There's like this surrender. Okay, well, getting up at 3:30 in the morning, it's like the middle of the night. What are you guys doing? You know, but you can't sleep in. I mean, the lights are on, you know, and bell is gang. Somewhere or other, you got to get, okay, all right, you know. So, and then there's the cold shower. Now, the cold shower is very easy in San Diego, but not so easy in Brooklyn or Chicago. So, and in those days, there was no hot water. There was no hot water. So that was a huge surrender. Am I going to leave the ashram, or am I going to be part of it? You know, am I going to overcome this? So it's like a challenge, right? So, I'm not going to leave it. You know, so you get into the 15-second shower, you know, and you come out. Whoa, I did it, you know. I'm a yogi. Let's go to Mangalarti. So this is the advantage of the ashram. And living at home, comfort, in the comfort, chances are very, very remote that if you're starting Krishna consciousness, you're going to be able to get up regularly at 3:30 to start your bhajan at 4:30, you know. But because of the culture of Krishna consciousness and, you know, it's the ashram, the peer pressure, it helps you to do what you need to do. And after a while, becomes not such a big deal. You're accustomed to doing. So the ashram life is great. Even when it, of course, we have to keep the ashram pure, you know. I remember we used to have these signs on the wall, no gaps, you know, ahoituki apratyata, you know, someone had read that. Try not to let there be gaps in your devotional service. So these reminders, and the devotee, you know, to be with the devotees, I'll end with this because it's late. In the nine yogendras, there's another, the second one, I think it's the second series of verses, deals with No, the second series of verses deals with the different levels of devotees. You know, the Madhya Adhikari and the very famous verses should be. And it's, I think the third one, it has the verse, Tasmad gurum papadyate jigyashu shreya uttamam. This is a verse that Prabhupada would quote all the time. Well, you have to take shelter of a guru. Therefore, the verse begins, one should take shelter of a spiritual master if one wants the ultimate good, shreya uttamam, in his life. And then it gives the qualifications of the spiritual master. Shabde parecha nishnatam brahmanubhashamashim. But then a few verses later, after describing how one should perform sincere service and things, it has wonderful verses about how devotees interact with each other. I'll share these two with you, then we should proceed. So it says, Parasparanu katanam pavanam bhagavadisha. I don't know if anyone knows this verse. Very beautiful verse. So when devotees get together, and this is your ashram, the association, sadhu sangha, what happens? Parasparanu katanam pavanam bhagavadisha. They mutually chant and hear and encourage each other in this chanting and hearing of the purifying glories of Hari, pavanam bhagavadisha. And the result is they develop mutually, mito ratir, friendly relations, attractions with each other, spiritual bonds, mitos and mutual satisfaction, tushti, pushti, chudapayana. And mutually they become detached from maya. And then the next verse is like my favorite. And one line in there is like very famous. Smarantyak smarayantyascha mito gaugahadam harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. And then the hair stand on that. I forget the Sanskrit for the second. So he says, thus, remembering Krishna and reminding each other of Krishna by mutually chanting the glories of Krishna, who is Aga Oga Hadam, who takes away floods of sinful reactions in the heart. Aga Oga Oga Hadam Harim. You know? They by such sadhana bhakti, which is hearing and chanting, they develop bhava bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. And then the hair starts standing, and then the next verse describes different symptoms. So the idea is that you get together and do what we're doing here, or if you're just two of you or five of you together, you know, then read something together, chant. What's the nice shloka you memorized? You know, elevate the katha. So that you're reminding each other of Krishna and remembering Krishna. And then the purification takes place and you can rise up to the platform of ecstasy. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.